Professor Trelawney stood up, surveying Hermione with unmistakable anger. "I am sorry to say that from the moment you have arrived in this class, my dear, it has been apparent that you do not have what the noble art of divination requires. Indeed, I don't remember ever meeting a student whose mind was so hopelessly mundane." There was a moment's silence, then, "Fine," said Hermione suddenly, getting up and cramming Unfogging the Future back into her bag. "Fine," she repeated, swinging the bag over her shoulder and almost knocking Ron off his chair. "I give up. I'm leaving." And to the whole class's amazement, Hermione strode over to the trapdoor, kicked it open, and climbed down the ladder out of sight. It took a few minutes for the class to settle down again. Professor Trelawney seemed to have forgotten all about the grim. She turned abruptly from Harry and Ron's table, breathing rather heavily as she tugged her gauzy shawl more closely to her. "Ooh," said Lavender suddenly, making everyone start. "Ooh, Professor Trelawney, I've just remembered. You saw her leaving, didn't you? Didn't you, Professor? Around Easter, one of our number will leave us forever. You said it ages ago, Professor." Professor Trelawney gave her a dewy smile. "Yes, my dear, I did indeed know that Miss Granger would be leaving us. One hopes, however, that one might have mistaken the signs. The inner eye can be a burden, you know." Lavender and Parvati looked deeply impressed and moved over so that Professor Trelawney could join their table instead. "Some day Hermione's having, eh?" Ron muttered to Harry, looking awed. "Yeah." Harry glanced into the crystal ball but saw nothing but swirling white mist. Had Professor Trelawney really seen the grim again? Would he? The last thing he needed was another near-fatal accident, with the Quidditch final drawing ever nearer. The Easter holidays were not exactly relaxing. The third years had never had so much homework. Neville Longbottom seemed close to a nervous collapse, and he wasn't the only one.
"Call this a holiday?"
Seamus Finnegan roared at the common room one afternoon.
"The exams are ages away. What are they playing at?"
But nobody had as much to do as Hermione. Even without divination, she was taking more subjects than anybody else. She was usually last to leave the common room at night, first to arrive at the library the next morning. She had shadows like lupins under her eyes and seemed constantly close to tears. Ron had taken over responsibility for Buckbeak's appeal. When he wasn't doing his own work, he was poring over enormously thick volumes with names like The Handbook of Hippogriff Psychology and Foul or Fowl, a study of hippogriff brutality. He was so absorbed, he even forgot to be horrible to Crookshanks. Harry, meanwhile, had to fit in his homework around Quidditch practice every day, not to mention endless discussions of tactics with Wood. The Gryffindor-Slytherin match would take place on the first Saturday after the Easter holidays. Slytherin was leading the tournament by exactly 200 points. This meant, as Wood constantly reminded his team, that they needed to win the match by more than that amount to win the cup. It also meant that the burden of winning fell largely on Harry, because capturing the Snitch was worth 150 points.
"So you must catch it only if we're more than 50 points up," Wood told Harry constantly. "Only if we're more than 50 points up, Harry, or we win the match, but lose the cup. You've got that, haven't you? You must catch the Snitch only if we're..." "I know, Oliver," Harry yelled.
The whole of Gryffindor House was obsessed with the coming match. Gryffindor hadn't won the Quidditch Cup since the legendary Charlie Weasley, Ron's second oldest brother, had been Seeker. But Harry doubted whether any of them, even Wood, wanted to win as much as he did. The enmity between Harry and Malfoy was at its highest point ever. Malfoy was still smarting about the mud-throwing incident in Hogsmeade and was even more furious that Harry had somehow wormed his way out of punishment. Harry hadn't forgotten Malfoy's attempt to sabotage him in the match against Ravenclaw, but it was the matter of Buckbeak that made him most determined to beat Malfoy in front of the entire school.
Never in anyone's memory had a match approached in such a highly charged atmosphere. By the time the holidays were over, tension between the two teams and their houses was at the breaking point. A number of small scuffles broke out in the corridors, culminating in a nasty incident in which a Griffin of fourth year and a Slytherin sixth year ended up in the hospital wing with leeks sprouting out of their ears. Harry was having a particularly bad time of it. He couldn't walk to class without Slytherin sticking out their legs and trying to trip him up. Crabbe and Goyle kept popping up wherever he went and slouching away looking disappointed when they saw him surrounded by people. Wood had given instructions that Harry should be accompanied everywhere he went, in case the Slytherins tried to put him out of action. The whole of Gryffindor House took up the challenge enthusiastically, so that it was impossible for Harry to get to classes on time, because he was surrounded by a vast, chattering crowd. Harry was more concerned for his firebolt's safety than his own. When he wasn't flying it, he locked it securely in his trunk and frequently dashed back up to Gryffindor Tower at break times to check that it was still there. All usual pursuits were abandoned in the Gryffindor common room the night before the match. Even Hermione had put down her books. "I can't work. I can't concentrate," she said nervously. There was a great deal of noise. Fred and George Weasley were dealing with the pressure by being louder and more exuberant than ever. Oliver Wood was crouched over a model of a Quidditch field in the corner, prodding little figures across it with his wand and muttering to himself. Angelina, Alicia, and Katie were laughing at Fred's and George's jokes. Harry was sitting with Ron and Hermione, removed from the center of things, trying not to think about the next day, because every time he did, he had the horrible sensation that something very large was fighting to get out of his stomach. "You're going to be fine," Hermione told him, though she looked positively terrified. "You've got a firebolt," said Ron. "Yeah," said Harry, his stomach writhing. It came as a relief when Wood suddenly stood up and yelled, "Team! Bed!" Harry slept badly. First he dreamed that he had overslept, and that Wood was yelling, "Where were you? We had to use Neville instead!" Then he dreamed that Malfoy and the rest of the Slytherin team arrived for the match riding dragons. He was flying at breakneck speed, trying to avoid a spurt of flames from Malfoy's steed's mouth, when he realized he had forgotten his firebolt. He fell through the air and woke with a start. It was a few seconds before Harry remembered that the match hadn't taken place yet, that he was safe in bed, and that the Slytherin team definitely wouldn't be allowed to play on dragons. He was feeling very thirsty. Quietly as he could, he got out of his four-poster and went to pour himself some water from the silver jug beneath the window. The grounds were still and quiet. No breath of wind disturbed the treetops in the forbidden forest. The Whomping Willow was motionless and innocent-looking. It looked as though the conditions for the match would be perfect. Harry set down his goblet and was about to turn back to his bed when something caught his eye. An animal of some kind was prowling across the silvery lawn. Harry dashed to his bedside table, snatched up his glasses and put them on, then hurried back to the window. It couldn't be the Grim. Not now, not right before the match. He peered out at the grounds again, and, after a minute's frantic searching, spotted it. It was skirting the edge of the forest now. It wasn't the Grim at all. It was a cat. Harry clutched the window ledge in relief as he recognized the bottle-brush tail. It was only Crookshanks. Or was it only Crookshanks? Harry squinted, pressing his nose flat against the glass. Crookshanks seemed to have come to a halt. Harry was sure he could see something else moving in the shadow of the trees, too. And just then it emerged, a gigantic, shaggy, black dog moving stealthily across the lawn, Crookshanks trotting at its side. Harry stared. What did this mean? If Crookshanks could see the dog as well, how could it be an omen of Harry's death? "Run," Harry hissed. "Run! Wake up! Huh? I need you to tell me if you can see something." "It's all dark, Harry," Ron muttered thickly. "What are you on about? Down here.
Harry looked quickly back out of the window. Crookshanks and the dog had vanished. Harry climbed onto the windowsill to look right down into the shadows of the castle, but they weren't there.
Where had they gone?
A loud snore told him Ron had fallen asleep again. Harry and the rest of the Gryffindor team entered the Great Hall the next day to enormous applause. Harry couldn't help grinning broadly as he saw that both the Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff tables were applauding them too. The Slytherin table hissed loudly as they passed. Harry noticed that Malfoy looked even paler than usual. Wood spent the whole of breakfast urging his team to eat while touching nothing himself. Then he hurried them off to the field before anyone else had finished, so they could get an idea of the conditions. As they left the Great Hall, everyone applauded again.
"Good luck, Harry,"
called Cho. Harry felt himself blushing.
"Okay, no wind to speak of. Sun's a bit bright. That could impair your vision. Watch out for it. Ground's fairly hard. Good, that'll give us a fast kick-off."
Wood paced the field, staring around with the team behind him. Finally, they saw the front doors of the castle open in the distance and the rest of the school spilling onto the lawn.
"Locker rooms," said Wood tersely.
None of them spoke as they changed into their scarlet robes. Harry wondered if they were feeling like he was, as though he'd eaten something extremely wriggly for breakfast. In what seemed like no time at all, Wood was saying,
"Okay, it's time. Let's go."
They walked out onto the field to a tidal wave of noise. Three-quarters of the crowd was wearing scarlet rosettes, waving scarlet flags with the Gryffindor lion upon them, or brandishing banners with slogans like "Go Gryffindor" and "Lions for the Cup." Behind the Slytherin goalposts, however, 200 people were wearing green. The silver serpent of Slytherin glittered on their flags, and Professor Snape sat in the very front row, wearing green like everyone else, and a very grim smile.
"And here are the Gryffindors,"
yelled Lee Jordan, who was acting as commentator as usual.
"Potter, Bell, Johnson, Spinett, Weasley, and Wood. Widely acknowledged as the best team Hogwarts has seen in a good few years."
Lee's comments were drowned by a tide of boos from the Slytherin end.
"And here comes the Slytherin team led by Captain Flint. He's made some changes in the lineup and seems to be going for size rather than skill."
More boos from the Slytherin crowd. Harry, however, thought Lee had a point. Malfoy was easily the smallest person on the Slytherin team. The rest of them were enormous.
"Captains, shake hands," said Madame Hooch.
Flint and Wood approached each other and grasped each other's hand very tightly. It looked as though each was trying to break the other's fingers.
"Mount your brooms," said Madame Hooch. 3, 2, 1.
The sound of her whistle was lost in the roar from the crowd as 14 brooms rose into the air. Harry felt his hair fly back off his forehead. His nerves left him in the thrill of the flight. He glanced around, saw Malfoy on his tail, and sped off in search of the snitch.
"And it's Gryffindor in possession. Alicia Spinett of Gryffindor with the Quaffle, heading straight for the Slytherin goalposts. Looking good. Alicia, ah, no. Quaffle intercepted by Warrington. Warrington of Slytherin tearing up the field. Wham! Nice bludger work there by George Weasley. Warrington drops the Quaffle. It's caught by Johnson. Gryffindor back in possession. Come on, Angelina. Nice swerve around Montague. Duck, Angelina. That's a bludger. She scores. 10-0 to Gryffindor."
Angelina punched the air as she soared around the end of the field. The sea of scarlet below was screaming its delight.
"Ouch!"
Angelina was nearly thrown from her broom as Marcus Flint went smashing into her.
"Sorry," said Flint as the crowd below booed. "Sorry, didn't see her."
A moment later, Fred Weasley chucked his beater's club at the back of Flint's head. Flint's nose smashed into the handle of his broom and began to bleed.
"That will do," shrieked Madame Hooch, zooming between them. "Penalty shot to Gryffindor for an unprovoked attack on their chaser. Penalty shot to Slytherin for deliberate damage to their chaser."
"Come off it, miss," howled Fred, but Madame Hooch blew her whistle and Alicia flew forward to take the penalty.
Come on, Alicia,
yelled Lee into the silence that had descended on the crowd.
Yes, she's beaten the keeper, 20-0 to Gryffindor.
Harry turned the firebolt sharply to watch Flint, still bleeding freely, fly forward to take the Slytherin penalty. Wood was hovering in front of the Gryffindor goalposts, his jaw clenched.
Course, Wood's a superb keeper,
Lee Jordan told the crowd as Flint waited for Madame Hooch's whistle.
Superb! Very difficult to pass. Very difficult indeed. Yes, I don't believe it! He saved it!
Relieved, Harry zoomed away, gazing around for the snitch, but still making sure he caught every word of Lee's commentary. It was essential that he hold Malfoy off the snitch until Gryffindor was more than 50 points up.
Gryffindor in possession. No, Slytherin in possession. No, Gryffindor back in possession. And it's Katie Bell. Katie Bell for Gryffindor with a quaffle. She's streaking up the field. That was deliberate!
Montague, a Slytherin chaser, had swerved in front of Katie, and instead of seizing the quaffle, had grabbed her head. Katie cartwheeled in the air, managed to stay on her broom, but dropped the quaffle. Madame Hooch's whistle rang out again as she soared over to Montague and began shouting at him. A minute later, Katie had put another penalty past the Slytherin seeker.
30-0! Take that, you dirty, cheating! Jordan, if you can't commentate in an unbiased way... I'm telling it like it is, Professor!
Harry felt a huge jolt of excitement. He had seen the snitch. It was shimmering at the foot of one of the Gryffindor goalposts. But he mustn't catch it yet, and if Malfoy saw it... Faking a look of sudden concentration, Harry pulled his firebolt around and sped off toward the Slytherin end. It worked. Malfoy went haring after him, clearly thinking Harry had seen the snitch there. Whoosh! One of the bludgers came streaking past Harry's right ear, hit by the gigantic Slytherin beater, Derek. Then again, whoosh! The second bludger grazed Harry's elbow. The other beater, Bowl, was closing in. Harry had a fleeting glimpse of Bowl and Derek zooming toward him, clubs raised. He turned the firebolt upward at the last second, and Bowl and Derek collided with a sickening crunch.
Ha-ha!
Yelled Lee Jordan as the Slytherin beaters lurched away from each other, clutching their heads.
Two bad boys! You'll need to get up earlier than that to beat a firebolt! And it's Gryffindor in possession again as Johnson takes the quaffle. Flint alongside her. Poke him in the eye, Angelina. It was a joke! Professor, it was a joke. Oh, no. Flint in possession. Flint flying toward the Gryffindor goalpost. Come on now, Wood, save!
But Flint has scored. There was an eruption of cheers from the Slytherin end, and Lee swore so badly that Professor McGonagall tried to tug the magical megaphone away from him.
Sorry, Professor, sorry. It won't happen again. So, Gryffindor in the lead, 30-10, and Gryffindor in possession.
It was turning into the dirtiest game Harry had ever played in. Enraged that Gryffindor had taken such an early lead, the Slytherins were rapidly resorting to any means to take the quaffle. Bowl hit Alicia with his club and tried to say he'd thought she was a bludger. George Weasley elbowed Bowl in the face in retaliation. Madame Hooch awarded both teams penalties, and Wood pulled off another spectacular save, making the score 40-10 to Gryffindor. The snitch had disappeared again. Malfoy was still keeping close to Harry as he soared over the match, looking around for it. Once Gryffindor was 50 points ahead, Katie scored 50-10. Fred and George Weasley were swooping around her, clubs raised in case any of the Slytherins were thinking of revenge. Bowl and Derek took advantage of Fred's and George's absence to aim both bludgers at Wood. They caught him in the stomach, one after the other, and he rolled over in the air, clutching his broom, completely winded. Madame Hooch was beside herself.
"You do not attack the keeper unless the quaffle is within the scoring area!"
she shrieked at Bowl and Derek.
"Gryffindor penalty!"
And Angelina scored, 60-10. Moments later, Fred Weasley pelted a bludger at Warrington, knocking the quaffle out of his hands. Alicia seized it and put it through the Slytherin goal, 70-10. The Gryffindor crowd below was screaming itself hoarse. Gryffindor was 60 points in the lead, and if Harry caught the snitch now, the cup was theirs. Harry could almost feel hundreds of eyes following him as he soared around the field, high above the rest of the game, with Malfoy speeding along behind him. And then he saw it. The snitch was sparkling 20 feet above him.
Harry put on a huge burst of speed. The wind was roaring in his ears. He stretched out his hand, but suddenly the firebolt was slowing down. Horrified, he looked around. Malfoy had thrown himself forward, grabbing hold of the firebolt's tail, and was pulling it back. "You!" Harry was angry enough to hit Malfoy, but couldn't reach. Malfoy was panting with the effort of holding onto the firebolt, but his eyes were sparkling maliciously. He had achieved what he'd wanted to do. The snitch had disappeared again.
"Penalty! Penalty to Gryffindor! I've never seen such tactics!"
Madam Hooch screeched, shooting up to where Malfoy was sliding back onto his Nimbus 2001.
"You cheating scum!"
Lee Jordan was howling into the megaphone, dancing out of Professor McGonagall's reach.
"You filthy, cheating b—"
Professor McGonagall didn't even bother to tell him off. She was actually shaking her finger in Malfoy's direction. Her hat had fallen off, and she too was shouting furiously. Alicia took Gryffindor's penalty, but she was so angry she missed by several feet. The Gryffindor team was losing concentration, and the Slytherins, delighted by Malfoy's foul on Harry, were being spurred on to greater heights.
"Slytherin in possession. Slytherin heading for goal.
Montague scores!"
Lee groaned.
70-20 to Gryffindor.
Harry was now marking Malfoy so closely their knees kept hitting each other. Harry wasn't going to let Malfoy anywhere near the snitch.
"Get out of it, Potter!"
Malfoy yelled in frustration as he tried to turn and found Harry blocking him.
"Angelina Johnson gets the quaffle for Gryffindor. Come on, Angelina, come on!"
Harry looked around. Every single Slytherin player apart from Malfoy was streaking up the pitch toward Angelina, including the Slytherin keeper. They were all going to block her. Harry wheeled the firebolt around, bent so low he was lying flat along the handle, and kicked it forward. Like a bullet, he shot toward the Slytherins.
Ah!
They scattered as the firebolt zoomed toward them. Angelina's way was clear.
"She scores! She scores! Gryffindor leads by 80 points to 20!
Harry, who had almost pelted headlong into the stands, skidded to a halt in midair, reversed, and zoomed back into the middle of the field. And then he saw something to make his heart stand still. Malfoy was diving, a look of triumph on his face. There, a few feet above the grass below, was a tiny, golden glimmer. Harry urged the firebolt downward, but Malfoy was miles ahead.
"Go! Go! Go!"
Harry urged his broom. He was gaining on Malfoy. Harry flattened himself to the broom handle as Bowl sent a bludger at him. He was at Malfoy's ankles. He was level. Harry threw himself forward, took both hands off his broom. He knocked Malfoy's arm out of the way and,
yes!
He pulled out of his dive, his hand in the air, and the stadium exploded. Harry soared above the crowd, an odd ringing in his ears. The tiny golden ball was held tight in his fist, beating its wings hopelessly against his fingers. Then Wood was speeding toward him, half blinded by tears. He seized Harry round the neck and sobbed unrestrainedly into his shoulder. Harry felt two large thumps as Fred and George hit them. Then Angelina's, Alicia's, and Katie's voices.
"We've won the cup! We've won the cup!"
Tangled together in a many-armed hug, the Gryffindor team sank, yelling hoarsely back to earth. Wave upon wave of crimson supporters was pouring over the barriers onto the field. Hands were raining down on their backs. Harry had a confused impression of noise and bodies pressing in on him. Then he and the rest of the team were hoisted onto the shoulders of the crowd. Thrust into the light, he saw Hagrid, plastered with crimson rosettes.
"You beat him, Harry! You beat him! Wait till I tell Buckbeak!"
There was Percy jumping up and down like a maniac, all dignity forgotten. Professor McGonagall was sobbing harder even than Wood, wiping her eyes with an enormous Gryffindor flag. And there, fighting their way toward Harry, were Ron and Hermione. Words failed them. They simply beamed as Harry was borne toward the stands, where Dumbledore stood waiting with the enormous Quidditch cup. If only there had been a Dementor around, as a sobbing Wood passed Harry the cup, as he lifted it into the air, Harry felt he could have produced the world's best Patronus.
Chapter 16. Professor Trelawney's Prediction. Harry's euphoria at finally winning the Quidditch Cup lasted at least a week. Even the weather seemed to be celebrating. As June approached, the days became cloudless and sultry, and all anybody felt like doing was strolling onto the grounds and flopping down on the grass with several pints of iced pumpkin juice, perhaps playing a casual game of gobstones, or watching the giant squid propel itself dreamily across the surface of the lake. But they couldn't. Exams were nearly upon them, and instead of lazing around outside, the students were forced to remain inside the castle, trying to bully their brains into concentrating while enticing wafts of summer air drifted in through the windows. Even Fred and George Weasley had been spotted working. They were about to take their OWLs, ordinary wizarding levels. Percy was getting ready to take his NEWTs, nastily exhausting wizarding tests, the highest qualification Hogwarts offered. As Percy hoped to enter the Ministry of Magic, he needed top grades. He was becoming increasingly edgy and gave very severe punishments to anybody who disturbed the quiet of the common room in the evenings. In fact, the only person who seemed more anxious than Percy was Hermione. Harry and Ron had given up asking her how she was managing to attend several classes at once, but they couldn't restrain themselves when they saw the exam schedule she had drawn up for herself. The first column read, Monday, 9 o'clock, Arithmancy, 9 o'clock, Transfiguration, Lunch, 1 o'clock, Charms, 1 o'clock, Ancient Runes.
Hermione?
Ron said cautiously because she was liable to explode when interrupted these days.
Are you sure you've copied down these times, right?
What? Snapped Hermione, picking up the exam schedule and examining it.
Yes, of course I have.
Is there any point asking how you're going to sit for two exams at once? Said Harry.
No,
said Hermione shortly.
Have either of you seen my copy of Numerology and Grammatica?
Oh, yeah, I borrowed it for a bit of bedtime reading,
said Ron, but very quietly. Hermione started shifting heaps of parchment around on her table, looking for the book. Just then, there was a rustle at the window, and Hedwig fluttered through it, a note clutched tight in her beak.
It's from Hagrid, said Harry, ripping the note open. Buckbeak's appeal. It's set for the 6th. That's the day we finish our exams,
said Hermione, still looking everywhere for her arithmancy book.
And they're coming up here to do it, said Harry, still reading from the letter. Someone from the Ministry of Magic and an executioner.
Hermione looked up, startled.
They're bringing the executioner to the appeal? But that sounds as though they've already decided.
Yeah, it does, said Harry slowly.
They can't, Ron howled. I've spent ages reading up on stuff for him. They can't just ignore it all.
But Harry had a horrible feeling that the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures had had its mind made up for it by Mr. Malfoy. Draco, who had been noticeably subdued since Gryffindor's triumph in the Quidditch final, seemed to regain some of his old swagger over the next few days. From sneering comments Harry overheard, Malfoy was certain Buckbeak was going to be killed, and seemed thoroughly pleased with himself for bringing it about. It was all Harry could do to stop himself imitating Hermione and hitting Malfoy in the face on these occasions. And the worst thing of all was that they had no time or opportunity to go and see Hagrid, because the strict new security measures had not been lifted, and Harry didn't dare retrieve his invisibility cloak from below the one-eyed witch. Exam week began, and an unnatural hush fell over the castle. The third years emerged from Transfiguration at lunchtime on Monday, limp and ashen-faced, comparing results and bemoaning the difficulty of the tasks they had been set, which had included turning a teapot into a tortoise. Hermione irritated the rest by fussing about how her tortoise had looked more like a turtle, which was the least of everyone else's worries.
Mine still had a spout for a tail. What a nightmare!
Were the tortoises supposed to breathe steam?
It still had a willow-patterned shell. Do you think that'll count against me?
Then, after a hasty lunch, it was straight back upstairs for the charms exam. Hermione had been right. Professor Flitwick did indeed test them on cheering charms. Harry slightly overdid his, out of nerves, and Ron, who was partnering him, ended up in fits of hysterical laughter and had to be led away to a quiet room for an hour before he was ready to perform the charm himself. After dinner, the students hurried back to their common rooms, not to relax, but to start studying for Care of Magical Creatures, Potions, and Astronomy. Hagrid presided over the Care of Magical Creatures exam the following morning with a very preoccupied air indeed. His heart didn't seem to be in it at all. He had provided a large tub of fresh flobber worms for the class and told them that to pass the test, their flobber worm had to still be alive at the end of 1 hour. As flobber worms flourished best if left to their own devices, it was the easiest exam any of them had ever taken, and also gave Harry, Ron, and Hermione plenty of opportunity to speak to Hagrid.
"Beaky's getting a bit depressed,"
Hagrid told them, bending low on the pretense of checking that Harry's flobber worm was still alive.
"Been cooped up too long. But still, we'll know day after tomorrow, one way or the other."
They had potions that afternoon, which was an unqualified disaster. Try as Harry might, he couldn't get his confusing concoction to thicken, and Snape, standing watch with an air of vindictive pleasure, scribbled something that looked suspiciously like a zero onto his notes before moving away. Then came astronomy at midnight up on the tallest tower, history of magic on Wednesday morning, in which Harry scribbled everything Florian Fortescue had ever told him about medieval witch hunts, while wishing he could have had one of Fortescue's choco-nut sundaes with him in the stifling classroom. Wednesday afternoon meant herbology, in the greenhouses under a baking hot sun, then back to the common room once more with sunburnt necks, thinking longingly of this time next day when it would all be over. Their second-to-last exam on Thursday morning was Defense Against the Dark Arts. Professor Lupin had compiled the most unusual exam any of them had ever taken, a sort of obstacle course outside in the sun, where they had to wade across a deep paddling pool containing a Grindylow, cross a series of potholes full of red caps, squish their way across a patch of marsh while ignoring misleading directions from a hinky-punk, then climb into an old trunk and battle with a new boggart. "Excellent, Harry," Lupin muttered as Harry climbed out of the trunk, grinning. "Full marks." Flush with his success, Harry hung around to watch Ron and Hermione. Ron did very well until he reached the hinky-punk, which successfully confused him into sinking waist-high into the quagmire. Hermione did everything perfectly until she reached the trunk with the boggart in it. After about a minute inside it, she burst out again, screaming.
"Hermione," said Lupin, startled. "What's the matter?"
"Professor McGonagall," Hermione gasped, pointing into the trunk. She said I'd failed everything."
It took a little while to calm Hermione down. When at last she had regained a grip on herself, she, Harry, and Ron went back to the castle. Ron was still slightly inclined to laugh at Hermione's boggart, but an argument was averted by the sight that met them on the top of the steps. Cornelius Fudge, sweating slightly in his pinstripe cloak, was standing there, staring out at the grounds. He started at the sight of Harry.
"Hello there, Harry," he said. "Just had an exam, I expect. Nearly finished?"
"Yes," said Harry. Hermione and Ron, not being on speaking terms with the Minister of Magic, hovered awkwardly in the background.
"Lovely day," said Fudge, casting an eye over the lake. "Pity. Pity."
He sighed deeply and looked down at Harry.
"I'm here on an unpleasant mission, Harry. The Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures required a witness to the execution of a mad hippogriff. As I needed to visit Hogwarts to check on the black situation, I was asked to step in."
"Does that mean the appeal's already happened?" Ron interrupted, stepping forward.
No. It's scheduled for this afternoon," said Fudge, looking curiously at Ron.
"Then you might not have to witness an execution at all," said Ron stoutly. "The hippogriff might get off." Before Fudge could answer, two wizards came through the castle doors behind him,
One was so ancient he appeared to be withering before their very eyes. The other was tall and strapping with a thin black moustache. Harry gathered that they were representatives of the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures, because the very old wizard squinted toward Hagrid's cabin and said in a feeble voice,
"Dear, dear, I'm getting too old for this. 2 o'clock, isn't it, Fudge?"
The black-moustached man was fingering something in his belt. Harry looked and saw that he was running one broad thumb along the blade of a shining axe. Ron opened his mouth to say something, but Hermione nudged him hard in the ribs and jerked her head toward the entrance hall.
"Why'd you stop me?" said Ron angrily as they entered the great hall for lunch. "Did you see them? They've even got the axe ready. This isn't justice!"
"Ron, your dad works for the Ministry. You can't go saying things like that to his boss,"
said Hermione, but she too looked very upset.
"As long as Hagrid keeps his head this time and argues his case properly, they can't possibly execute Buckbeak."
But Harry could tell Hermione didn't really believe what she was saying. All around them, people were talking excitedly as they ate their lunch, happily anticipating the end of the exams that afternoon. But Harry, Ron, and Hermione, lost in worry about Hagrid and Buckbeak, didn't join in. Harry and Ron's last exam was divination, Hermione's Muggle studies. They walked up the marble staircase together. Hermione left them on the first floor, and Harry and Ron proceeded all the way up to the seventh, where many of their class were sitting on the spiral staircase to Professor Trelawney's classroom, trying to cram in a bit of last-minute studying.
"She's seeing us all separately,"
Neville informed them as they went to sit down next to him. He had his copy of Unfogging the Future open on his lap at the pages devoted to crystal gazing.
"Have either of you ever seen anything in a crystal ball?"
he asked them unhappily.
"Nope,"
said Ron in an offhand voice. He kept checking his watch. Harry knew that he was counting down the time until Buckbeak's appeal started. The line of people outside the classroom shortened very slowly. As each person climbed back down the silver ladder, the rest of the class hissed.
"What did she ask? Was it okay?"
But they all refused to say.
"She says the crystal balls told her that if I tell you, I'll have a horrible accident,"
squeaked Neville as he clambered back down the ladder toward Harry and Ron, who had now reached the landing.
"That's convenient," snorted Ron. "You know, I'm starting to think Hermione was right about her."
He jabbed his thumb toward the trapdoor overhead.
"She's a right old fraud."
"Yeah," said Harry, looking at his own watch. It was now 2 o'clock. "Wish she'd hurry up." Parvati came back down the ladder, glowing with pride.
"She says I've got all the makings of a true seer,"
she informed Harry and Ron.
"I saw loads of stuff. Well, good luck."
She hurried off down the spiral staircase toward Lavender.
"Ronald Weasley,"
said the familiar misty voice from over their heads. Ron grimaced at Harry and climbed the silver ladder out of sight. Harry was now the only person left to be tested. He settled himself on the floor with his back against the wall, listening to a fly buzzing in the sunny window, his mind across the grounds with Hagrid. Finally, after about 20 minutes, Ron's large feet reappeared on the ladder.
"How'd it go?"
Harry asked him, standing up.
"Rubbish,"
said Ron.
"Couldn't see a thing, so I made some stuff up. Don't think she was convinced, though."
"Meet you in the common room,"
Harry muttered, as Professor Trelawney's voice called,
"Harry Potter."
The tower room was hotter than ever before. The curtains were closed, the fire was alight, and the usual sickly scent made Harry cough as he stumbled through the clutter of chairs and tables to where Professor Trelawney sat waiting for him before a large crystal ball.
"Good day, my dear,"
she said softly.
"If you will kindly gaze into the orb, take your time now. Then tell me what you see within it."
Harry bent over the crystal ball and stared as hard as he could, willing it to show him something other than swirling white fog, but nothing happened.
"Well,"
Professor Trelawney prompted delicately,
"what do you see?"
The heat was overpowering, and his nostrils were stinging with the perfume smoke wafting from the fire beside them. He thought of what Ron had just said, and decided to pretend. Said Harry, a dark shape.
What does it resemble? Whispered Professor Trelawney. Think now.
Harry cast his mind around, and it landed on Buckbeak. A hippogriff, he said firmly.
Indeed, whispered Professor Trelawney, scribbling keenly on the parchment perched upon her knees. My boy, you may well be seeing the outcome of poor Hagrid's trouble with the Ministry of Magic. Look closer. Does the hippogriff appear to have its head?
Yes, said Harry firmly.
Are you sure? Professor Trelawney urged him. Are you quite sure, dear? You don't see it writhing on the ground, perhaps, and a shadowy figure raising an axe behind it?
No, said Harry, starting to feel slightly sick.
No blood? No weeping Hagrid?
No, said Harry again, wanting more than ever to leave the room and the heat. It looks fine. It's flying away. Professor Trelawney sighed.
Well, dear, I think we'll leave it there. A little disappointing, but I'm sure you did your best.
Relieved, Harry got up, picked up his bag, and turned to go. But then a loud, harsh voice spoke behind him.
It will happen tonight.
Harry wheeled round. Professor Trelawney had gone rigid in her armchair. Her eyes were unfocused and her mouth sagging.
Sorry, said Harry.
But Professor Trelawney didn't seem to hear him. Her eyes started to roll. Harry sat there in a panic. She looked as though she was about to have some sort of seizure. He hesitated, thinking of running to the hospital wing, and then Professor Trelawney spoke again, in the same harsh voice, quite unlike her own.
The Dark Lord lies alone and friendless, abandoned by his followers. His servant has been chained these 12 years. Tonight, before midnight, the servant will break free and set out to rejoin his master. The Dark Lord will rise again with his servant's aid, greater and more terrible than ever he was. Tonight, before midnight, the servant will set out to rejoin his master.
Professor Trelawney's head fell forward onto her chest. She made a grunting sort of noise. Harry sat there, staring at her. Then, quite suddenly, Professor Trelawney's head snapped up again.
I'm so sorry, dear boy, she said dreamily. The heat of the day, you know. I drifted off for a moment.
Harry sat there, staring at her.
Is there anything wrong, my dear?
You just told me that the Dark Lord's going to rise again, that his servants going to go back to him. Professor Trelawney looked thoroughly startled.
The Dark Lord? He who must not be named? My dear boy, that's hardly something to joke about. Rise again, indeed. But you just said it. You said the Dark Lord. I think you must have dozed off too, dear, said Professor Trelawney. I will certainly not presume to predict anything quite as far-fetched as that.
Harry climbed back down the ladder and the spiral staircase, wondering. Had he just heard Professor Trelawney make a real prediction? Or had that been her idea of an impressive end to the test? 5 minutes later, he was dashing past the security trolls outside the entrance to Gryffindor Tower, Professor Trelawney's words still resounding in his head. People were striding past him in the opposite direction, laughing and joking, heading for the grounds and a bit of long-awaited freedom. By the time he had reached the portrait hall and entered the common room, it was almost deserted. Over in the corner, however, sat Ron and Hermione.
"Professor Trelawney," Harry panted, "she just told me."
But he stopped abruptly at the sight of their faces.
"Buckbeak lost," said Ron weakly. "Hagrid's just sent this."
Hagrid's note was dry this time. No tears had splattered it. Yet his hands seemed to have shaken so much as he wrote that it was hardly legible. "Lost appeal. They're going to execute at sunset. Nothing you can do. Don't come down. I don't want you to see it, Hagrid.
We've got to go, said Harry at once. He can't just sit there on his own, waiting for the executioner. Sunset, though, said Ron, who was staring out of the window in a glazed sort of way. We'd never be allowed, especially you, Harry.
Harry sank his head into his hands, thinking.
If we only had the invisibility cloak.
Where is it?
Said Hermione. Harry told her about leaving it in the passageway under the one-eyed witch.
If Snape sees me anywhere near there again, I'm in serious trouble, he finished. That's true, said Hermione, getting to her feet. If he sees you...
How do you open the witch's hump again?
You tap it and say, Descendium, said Harry. But Hermione didn't wait for the rest of his sentence. She strode across the room, pushed open the fat lady's portrait, and vanished from sight.
She hasn't gone to get it, Ron said, staring after her.
She had. Hermione returned a quarter of an hour later with a silvery cloak folded carefully under her robes.
Hermione, I don't know what's gotten into you lately, said Ron, astounded. First you hit Malfoy, then you walk out on Professor Trelawney.
Hermione looked rather flattered. They went down to dinner with everybody else, but did not return to Gryffindor Tower afterward. Harry had the cloak hidden down the front of his robes. He had to keep his arms folded to hide the lump. They skulked in an empty chamber off the entrance hall, listening until they were sure it was deserted. They heard a last pair of people hurrying across the hall and a door slamming. Hermione poked her head around the door.
Okay, she whispered. No one there. Cloak on.
Walking very close together so that nobody would see them, they crossed the hall on tiptoe beneath the cloak, then walked down the stone front steps into the grounds. The sun was already sinking behind the Forbidden Forest, gilding the top branches of the trees. They reached Hagrid's cabin and knocked. He was a minute in answering, and when he did, he looked all around for his visitor, pale-faced and trembling.
"It's us," Harry hissed. "We're wearing the invisibility cloak. Let us in, and we can take it off."
"You shouldn't have come," Hagrid whispered.
But he stood back, and they stepped inside. Hagrid shut the door quickly, and Harry pulled off the cloak. Hagrid was not crying, nor did he throw himself upon their necks. He looked like a man who did not know where he was or what to do. This helplessness was worse to watch than tears.
"Want some tea?" he said.
His great hands were shaking as he reached for the kettle.
"Where's Buckbeak, Hagrid?" said Hermione hesitantly.
I took him outside,"
said Hagrid, spilling milk all over the table as he filled up the jug.
"He's tethered in me pumpkin patch. Thought he ought to see the trees and smell fresh air before..."
Hagrid's hand trembled so violently that the milk jug slipped from his grasp and shattered all over the floor.
"I'll do it, Hagrid,"
said Hermione quickly, hurrying over and starting to clean up the mess.
"There's another one in the cupboard,"
Hagrid said, sitting down and wiping his forehead on his sleeve. Harry glanced at Ron, who looked back hopelessly.
"Isn't there anything anyone can do, Hagrid?" Harry asked fiercely, sitting down next to him. "Dumbledore."
"He's tried," said Hagrid. "He's got no power to overrule the committee. He told them Buckbeak's all right, but they're scared. You know what Lucius Malfoy's like. Threatened him, I expect. And the executioner, McNair. He's an old pal of Malfoy's. But it'll be quick and clean, and I'll be beside him."
Hagrid swallowed. His eyes were darting all over the cabin, as though looking for some shred of hope or comfort.
"Dumbledore's gonna come down while it happens. Wrote me this morning. Said he wants to be with me. Great man, Dumbledore."
Hermione, who had been rummaging in Hagrid's cupboard for another milk jug, let out a small, quickly stifled sob. She straightened up with the new jug in her hands, fighting back tears.
We'll stay with you too, Hagrid.
She began, but Hagrid shook his shaggy head.
"You're to go back up to the castle. I told you I don't want you watching, and you shouldn't be down here anyway. If Fudge and Dumbledore catch you out without permission, Harry, you'll be in big trouble."
Silent tears were now streaming down Hermione's face, but she hid them from Hagrid, bustling around making tea. Then, as she picked up the milk bottle to pour some into the jug, she let out a shriek.
"Ron, I don't believe it! It's Scabbers!"
Ron gaped at her.
"What are you talking about?"
Hermione carried the milk jug over to the table and turned it upside down. With a frantic squeak and much scrabbling to get back inside, Scabbers the rat came sliding out onto the table.
"Scabbers!" said Ron blankly. "Scabbers, what are you doing here?"
He grabbed the struggling rat and held him up to the light. Scabbers looked dreadful. He was thinner than ever. Large tufts of hair had fallen out, leaving wide, bald patches, and he writhed in Ron's hands as though desperate to free himself.
"It's okay, Scabbers," said Ron. "No cats. There's nothing here to hurt you."
Hagrid suddenly stood up, his eyes fixed on the window. His normally ruddy face had gone the color of parchment.
"They're coming."
Harry, Ron, and Hermione whipped around. A group of men was walking down the distant castle steps. In front was Albus Dumbledore, his silver beard gleaming in the dying sun. Next to him trotted Cornelius Fudge. Behind them came the feeble old committee member and the executioner, McNair.
"You gotta go," said Hagrid. Every inch of him was trembling. "They mustn't find you here. Go now."
Ron stuffed Scabbers into his pocket, and Hermione picked up the cloak.
"I'll let you out the back way," said Hagrid.
They followed him to the door into his back garden. Harry felt strangely unreal, and even more so when he saw Buckbeak a few yards away, tethered to a tree behind Hagrid's pumpkin patch. Buckbeak seemed to know something was happening. He turned his sharp head from side to side and pawed the ground nervously.
"It's okay, Beaky," said Hagrid softly. "It's okay."
He turned to Harry, Ron, and Hermione.
"Go on," he said. "Get going."
But they didn't move.
"Hagrid, we can't. We'll tell them what really happened."
"They can't kill him. Go,"
said Hagrid fiercely.
"It's bad enough without you lot in trouble and all."
They had no choice. As Hermione threw the cloak over Harry and Ron, they heard voices at the front of the cabin. Hagrid looked at the place where they had just vanished from sight.
"Go quick," he said hoarsely. "Don't listen."
And he strode back into his cabin as someone knocked at the front door. Slowly, in a kind of horrified trance, Harry, Ron, and Hermione set off silently around Hagrid's house. As they reached the other side, the front door closed with a sharp snap.
"Please, let's hurry,"
Hermione whispered.
"I can't stand it. I can't bear it."
They started up the sloping lawn toward the castle. The sun was sinking fast now. The sky had turned to a clear, purple-tinged grey, but to the west there was a ruby-red glow. Ron stopped dead.
"Oh, please, Ron,"
she began.
"It's Scabbers. He won't stay put."
Ron was bent over, trying to keep Scabbers in his pocket, but the rat was going berserk, squeaking madly, twisting and flailing, trying to sink its teeth into Ron's hand.
"Scabbers! It's me, you idiot! It's Ron!"
Ron hissed. They heard a door open behind them and men's voices.
"Oh, Ron, please, let's move. They're going to do it,"
Hermione breathed.
"Okay, Scabbers, stay put."
They walked forward. Harry, like Hermione, was trying not to listen to the rumble of voices behind them. Ron stopped again.
"I can't hold him. Scabbers, shut up. Everybody'll hear us."
The rat was squealing wildly, but not loudly enough to cover up the sounds drifting from Hagrid's garden. There was a jumble of indistinct male voices, a silence, and then, without warning, the unmistakable swish
and thud of an axe. Hermione swayed on the spot.
They did it,
she whispered to Harry.
I don't believe it. They did it.
Chapter 17. Cat, Rat, and Dog. Harry's mind had gone blank with shock. The three of them stood transfixed with horror under the invisibility cloak. The very last rays of the setting sun were casting a bloody light over the long-shadowed grounds. Then, behind them, they heard a wild howling. Hagrid, Harry muttered. Without thinking about what he was doing, he made to turn back, but both Ron and Hermione seized his arms.
We can't, said Ron, who was paper-white. He'll be in worse trouble if they know we've been to see him.
Hermione's breathing was shallow and uneven.
How could they?
She choked.
How could they?
Come on, said Ron, whose teeth seemed to be chattering.
They set off back toward the castle, walking slowly to keep themselves hidden under the cloak. The light was fading fast now. By the time they reached open ground, darkness was settling like a spell around them.
Scabbers, keep still,
Ron hissed, clamping his hand over his chest. The rat was wriggling madly. Ron came to a sudden halt, trying to force Scabbers deeper into his pocket.
What's the matter with you, you stupid rat? Stay still. Ouch! He bit me. Ron, be quiet,
Hermione whispered urgently.
Fudge will be out here in a minute.
He won't stay put.
Scabbers was plainly terrified. He was writhing with all his might, trying to break free of Ron's grip.
What's the matter with him?
But Harry had just seen, slinking toward them, his body low to the ground, wide yellow eyes glinting eerily in the darkness, Crookshanks. Whether he could see them or was following the sound of Scabbers' squeaks, Harry couldn't tell.
Crookshanks! Hermione moaned. No, go away, Crookshanks, go away!
But the cat was getting nearer.
Scabbers! No!
Too late, the rat had slipped between Ron's clutching fingers, hit the ground, and scampered away. In one bound, Crookshanks sprang after him, and before Harry or Hermione could stop him, Ron had thrown the invisibility cloak off himself and pelted away into the darkness.
Ron!
Hermione moaned. She and Harry looked at each other, then followed at a sprint. It was impossible to run full out under the cloak. They pulled it off and it streamed behind them like a banner as they hurled after Ron. They could hear his feet thundering along ahead and his shouts at Crookshanks.
Get away from him! Get away! Scabbers, come here!
There was a loud thud.
Gotcha! Get off, you stinking cat!
Harry and Hermione almost fell over Ron. They skidded to a stop right in front of him. He was sprawled on the ground, but Scabbers was back in his pocket. He had both hands held tight over the quivering lump.
Ron, come on, back under the cloak,
Hermione panted.
Dumbledore, the minister, they'll be coming back out in a minute.
But before they could cover themselves again, before they could even catch their breath, they heard the soft pounding of gigantic paws. Something was bounding toward them, quiet as a shadow, an enormous, pale-eyed, jet-black dog. Harry reached for his wand, but too late. The dog had made an enormous leap, and the front paws hit him on the chest. He keeled over backward in a whirl of hair. He felt its hot breath, saw inch-long teeth. But the force of its leap had carried it too far. It rolled off him. Dazed, feeling as though his ribs were broken, Harry tried to stand up. He could hear it growling as it skidded around for a new attack. Ron was on his feet. As the dog sprang back toward them, he pushed Harry aside. The dog's jaws fastened instead around Ron's outstretched arm. Harry lunged forward. He seized a handful of the brute's hair, but it was dragging Ron away as easily as though he were a rag doll. Then, out of nowhere, something hit Harry so hard across the face he was knocked off his feet again. He heard Hermione shriek with pain and fall too. Harry groped for his wand, blinking blood out of his eyes.
Lumos, he whispered.
The wand light showed him the trunk of a thick tree. They had chased scabbers into the shadow of the Whomping Willow, and its branches were creaking as though in a high wind, whipping backward and forward to stop them going nearer. And there, at the base of the trunk, was the dog, dragging Ron backward into a large gap in the roots. Ron